And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our next guest has a business with a logo saying the company was established in 1976, which is the same year its founder was born. So this suggests a successful art, design, and illustration enterprise that thrives off of, well, child's play. And joining us now is the snickering and giggling Jeremy Motto, a.k.a. Mad, the founder and creator behind Mad Toy Design. He's worked with several well-known brands, including Kid Robot, Yum Brands, Pepsi, Sion, Swatch, NFL, Upper Deck, Mattel, and others. Mr. Motto will be participating in the third annual Kansas City Design Week, which runs through March 7th. Though Jeremy's talk will be sold out, there will be other interesting lectures and workshops, many open to the public. Jeremy Motto, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Going to get in this and get mad props with you. Tell us about Mad Toys.
Mad Toy Design is basically the company I created so that I can make a living. I've been doing freelance work since high school, and I had gone off to college in Los Angeles, moved back to Kansas City, where I'm originally from, in 2005, and kind of needed to get official. So I established Mad Toy Design, Inc.
How are your designs different than the traditional idea of a quote-unquote toy?
The stuff that I do under the Mad Toy Design label, so to speak, is definitely a lot more edgy, a lot more collectible, not necessarily targeted towards younger kids, although some of the consulting work I do is for larger companies, Mattel, Pepsi, those kind of guys. But the Mad Toy Design stuff is definitely more on the art vibe. I try to add a little bit of edge to everything I do, a little bit of humor, inject some of my own style, some of the things I'm into. So,
speaking of humor and style, what were your favorite toys as a kid? And bring that forward.
Definitely Legos. I grew up playing with them. It was something that my grandfather actually kind of pushed onto me to help me, I think, not only grow as a creative person, but just to explore how to build in 3D. So I was always into that. I like the flexibility of being able to use a toy or use an item and mix it with my imagination and create my own stuff. So I definitely think that that had a big influence going into, you know, choosing my career path.
Right. And so what was the light bulb going off in your head? What was the defining moment when you said, I'm going to design toys for a living along with my other artistic pursuits?
I'd always been into art, drawing, sculpting.
Legos.
Legos, exactly. Was a big Star Wars kid growing up, G.I. Joe, all that kind of stuff. So I never really let that go. And when I went to art school, and when I signed up, they actually approached me and said, we're starting a toy design program, and would you like to be in it? And I said, of course. You know, I get to draw, I get to sculpt, do comic books, all that kind of stuff, and actually make a living from it. And yeah, I jumped headfirst into it.
Was that your thought, where you wanted to have more fun, whereas a lot of other artists maybe trying to make a statement, maybe trying to be mad all the time, maybe trying to, you know, open up their veins and put their blood on the canvas and all that type of stuff. But you chose the toys. You wanted to have fun.
Yeah.
What was behind that approach?
You know, I wanted to make a living. I didn't want to be a starving artist.
Right.
And, you know, I went into the toy design. It just seemed like a really fun job. And, you know, I learned, got a ton of experience in college. I worked for a lot of companies in California. And, you know, the injection of the art toy movement kind of started popping up in the U.S. About 2002, which is kind of when I got into it. And I was one of the few, I'd say, Western artists that kind of helped get into it. I got into it really early and kind of lucky at the same time.
Now, when you say Western artists, you don't mean the Western part of the United States. You mean the Western world.
Yeah, the U.S.
The offshoots of the anime, Pokemon type, you know,
well,
those type of, that started as arts movement toys.
Yeah.
Art toys.
The
collectibles.
The collectible toy movement, I mean, it's been huge for a long time, but art toys in general, started in the late 90s in Hong Kong and Japan.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of stumbled onto it through research through one of my old jobs. And, you know, I found these magazines from Japan and China and stuff. And I had no idea what it said, but that was a really cool looking toy. And I want to do that. And I spent the last, you know, 10 years really diving into that and luckily being successful at it.
What is an art toy?
It's basically a 3D limited edition print. You know, you go to a gallery at a museum, you see a painting on the wall, you know, you can buy a print of it. The idea with the art toy movement, kind of in its simplest form, is, you know, it's super collectible. You know, we may only make 300 pieces, 100 pieces, sometimes less, sometimes more. But the idea is it's fine art for the masses in the toy world. So they're really, like I said, they're 3D prints is kind of the easiest way to explain it.
And what is urban vinyl? That sort of led to the urban vinyl
right
movement with you. How did that come together? What is that?
Urban vinyl is kind of, I guess, what it's been classified: art toys, urban vinyl. The vinyl part is basically the material that some of the toys are made out of. The urban part is just the theme. You know, there's a lot of hip hop, a lot of graffiti, a lot of street art, a lot of lowbrow art. It's all been kind of bunched into this one category of urban vinyl.
Speaking of lowbrow, hip hop, street art, tell us about your Dunny and Money designs.
One of my biggest clients is Kid Robot, and they are the largest, I'd say, U.S. company that does art toys or urban vinyl toys. And one of their largest brands is the Dunny and the Money. And basically, it's a platform. It's a 3D canvas that is open for other artists to apply their graphics or their theme or their, you know, whatever their vision is to it. And my stuff is definitely more just what I'm into. I'm really into, you know, tattoo culture, street culture. So I try to inject a lot of that into my designs. You know, most of my guys have some kind of tattoo one way or another.
And you brought in an example. We have with us in the studio an example of one of your collaborations with Kid Robot. The box in and of itself looks like an art project in and of itself. It is called Bent World Beats. Tell us about Bent World Beats.
Right. Bent World is a brand that I actually created, and this is part of what I discuss in my my talk at the Kansas City Design Week. It's one of the brands that I've created. I think early 2006 was the first time I came up with the Bent World, and at that time it was the Bent World Vandals. So it was all, you know, graffiti, painting supplies that are they're real world tools with attitude. And you know, my vision of the Bent World is, you know, you need your marker, it would actually get up, walk over to you, but it have attitude because, you know, its entire existence is to be used and abused.
Well, this definitely has attitude. tell me what I'm holding here in my hand. It's a miniature. It's a
right
example of the 3D canvas that you're talking about.
Exactly. The Bent World Beats that I brought in, it's a blind box figure. So you go to the store, you pay about $10, you get a box, and you have no idea what's inside it.
I have no idea what's inside. Now, you have two different versions of these Bent World Beats figurines. One is the studio version.
Right.
The other is the tour version. I'm holding in my hand right now the tour version. Tell me the difference between the studio version and the tour version.
Actually, you won't know what you're holding until you open it. But the idea behind the Bent World series is they come new and used. So with this series, the studio version, everything's clean and nice and brand new. The tour version is beat up, stickers on it, you know, graffiti, scratches, whatever.
And ladies and gentlemen, I have drawn, drum roll, literally, because it is a drum with feet.
Yep.
And it's called Taps.
Yep.
And the difference between the tour version of the Taps is that mine has a hole in the drum.
Right. You got the tour version, who is has seen better days, I guess. I have one as well, so maybe I should open mine.
Yeah, open yours and let's compare. But we should tell the audience that you have a studio version, right?
Yeah, there's a studio version of that same figure where he's brand new.
Right.
The version I have, I don't know. They, like I said, the idea behind the blind box is you have no idea what you're getting. The pictures on the side are mainly just so you can, you know, look at it and be like, ooh, I want that one. That one's really collectible. I got to buy more so I can get that guy. So my guy is, okay, let's see.
An amp.
Looks
like an amp.
And his name is actually Amped, and this is also a tour version.
He's Amped.
Yeah. So, you know, he's got on the side, it says, you know, Bentworld Beats Tour, a lot of spray paint. The speaker cover is all torn and ripped. You know, he's got a lot of damage just from being on tour, you know. So that's kind of the idea behind this series is or with any of the Bentworld series is the new and the used.
Now tell me, where do I go from here? Ladies and gentlemen, I have a drum with eyes and feet, black arms, skinny black feet, ripped drum set, all types of designs on around it. What am I now supposed to – this is an example of your 3D canvas.
Right.
Now, what would I now do with this? Would I take this and make it a necklace? Would I put additional stickers on it? Would I just set it somewhere and hope that dust doesn't collect on it? Or is that the whole idea?
People get pretty fanatical and try to collect them all. I think a lot of people, you know, they show up on desks. You know, you go to your office or whatever, put it on your desk. Hopefully you go – to a store and you buy a bunch more is always a good idea. If you like the series. They're visually fun. There's no real function to them.
They are visually fun.
Other than, yeah, just it's something nice to look at.
An amp called Amp.
Yeah.
And a drum with feet. I mean, how could you not have fun with that? What's involved in designing things?
I actually do everything. In the design process. So, you know, you were talking about the packaging. I do all my own package design. I do all my character art. I do all the production art. A lot of times I'm actually working back and forth with the factories in China that are producing these things. So just because of my, I'd say, education and experience, I'm able to literally go from, you know, a doodle on a napkin to delivering product at your doorstep.
So. And as we're talking, the leg on my drum has broken.
Oh, does it just pop off? I think
it just pops off.
Yeah,
it's not broken.
No, I don't think so.
This is the tour version, so you know it's been through all types of stuff.
It's just one more, you know, one more ding, right?
A one-legged drum.
You can have mine too.
No, but he moves to the beat of a different.
There you go. There you go.
Drummer. You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM, KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. We're joined by Jeremy Model, who makes model toys, which in turn makes him mad. And he is the proprietor, founder, and artist, designer, and businessman behind Mad Toy Design. The third annual Kansas City Design Week is running through March 7th. Even though Jeremy Model's talk will be sold out, there will be other interesting lectures and workshops open to the public as well. What's involved in the what is the material of these 3D canvases, like this one-legged drum that I'm holding in my hand?
This is – it's all plastic. It's a mix of PVC, rotocasted PVC, which is kind of the bulk of the body, and then injection molded ABS for the arms and legs. The deco, all the graphics are printed on either via like a spray mask or essentially a stamp. You know, an ink stamp. It's also called tampo printing. And that's kind of the gist of making toys. I mean, because I know the process behind it, it allows me to produce ideas that, you know, come out of my head. And then when they're actually manufactured, they're exactly the way I want them.
You hear that the toy business, even though the products are cute, you hear that the toy business is a very tough business to be in, very competitive, lots of interesting characters involved in it. Is it a tough business to be in, and how do you protect your designs?
I do a lot of license agreements with most of my clients. Some of them, you know, they buy out the rights straight up. I tend to prefer licensing just because, you know, royalties are the greatest invention in the world.
They are.
The toy design business in general is, it's pretty intense, but at the same time, it's toys. And if you lose that focus and it's all about the business and the money, it tends to make you not have as much fun. And that's why I have actually kind of moved into this art toy world, because it's not so much about the business as it is about the product.
What types of designs would you typically just do a one-off design for a client, and what types of clients would typically license your designs?
Right. Well, let's see. A one-off product, I do a lot of custom-painted pieces for collectors and art shows and galleries around the world. I was actually just in a casino doing a paint session. I painted a live 4-foot giant kid robot dummy. So that's definitely kind of a one-off, deal. The license projects, Kid Robot licenses my stuff. When I do collaborations with like Swatch, they license the artwork so that they can put it on different products.
How did that collaboration come about with Swatch?
Again, it was a tie-in with Kid Robot. Basically, it was a watch and a dunny, which is their biggest platform figure. And I submitted a bunch of designs. I was lucky enough to be chosen as one of the, I think, 8 artists that were involved. And even more than that, they took my graphic and used it for the global marketing campaign. So I got to go. I went on a 5-country tour, got to do all kinds of signings, and it ended up finishing in New York City. And my artwork was, 30 feet tall in Times Square, which was just, it floored me.
Do you consider yourself more of an artist first or a toy maker first or a designer? How does your creativity stack up? What's the hierarchy of your creativity?
I think it depends on the project at hand. If I'm doing a piece for a show, I'm an artist. I think day to day, I'm more of a designer, but I keep the artist mentality of how I approach the problem or the project.
Tell us about the other areas that your design work bleeds into beyond the toys.
Toys, illustration, for magazines and newspapers and stuff like that. A lot of apparel design, lifestyle goods, a lot of electronic products. I've done some app stuff for, mobile technology and all that. The nice thing about being, my own company is the flexibility to move into different categories. So that's...
And where do you go to find inspiration? You're sort of a walking billboard as you come into the studio here. Your hat is fully laced and your shirt is Ways and Means with a big bad wolf with a bowler hat. Tell us about where your inspiration comes from.
I grew up on old cartoons, so I tend to reference that a lot with my style. Taking that kind of iconic, familiar look and reworking it with more of a modern, maybe street twist. As far as my apparel and the things I wear, I decided a long time ago I'm not going to wear other people's, I'm not going to be somebody else's billboard. So I tend to wear everything I make, whether it's my own products or something I designed for another label. So
there seems to be a big influence throughout all of your work, whether it's the t-shirt or whether it's this one-legged drum toy that I'm holding in my hand that I now have from your Bent World Beats miniature toy series. They seem to have a hip-hop influence, the types of pieces that you see on murals, the bombing techniques that the graffiti artists use, the sort of cartoonish eyes larger than life, round mouths, very hip-hop influence. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I grew up with hip-hop. While most of my peers as a kid were listening to, bad 80s hair bands, I was trying to figure out how to break dance in my garage. So I grew up with, Run DMC and Beastie Boys and a lot of stuff that I still listen to today. And when I'm working, I even play, and it helps to definitely influence me. The graffiti thing, again, it's kind of a product of my environment.
Did you experiment with the spray painting and the bombing and the drawing of graffiti?
Early on. More so when I moved to L.A. Out of high school, you know, I got into it quite a bit. And just through a couple of experiences decided, you know what, I should focus on making toys.
Right.
It's a lot safer and you stay out of trouble.
Right.
But I basically funneled all of that style and energy that I love so much about graffiti into, you know, my products.
Do you work with other local designers?
Yes, I do. There's a couple of guys that I work with that, you know, I'm really good friends. Scribe is one of them. There's another guy, Syke, who does a lot of apparel and whatnot here in town.
Shout out to Syke, Psychonomics.
That's right. There you go. And so, yeah, we're all good friends. And they're some of the few people that I have time to hang out with here in town. You know, I don't actually work for any companies here in Kansas City. All of my clients are out of state or overseas. So, you know, when I do have some free time, it's nice to hook up with those guys and, you know, have a drink and talk shop and, you know, just be on the same level with some peers.
It's yeah, those nice. Guys are all right.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
If someone listening, Jeremy, wants to start their own brand, where should they begin?
Oh, with the idea, you know, it's got to be something unique. It's got to have its own style, its own look. And, you know, at the end of the day, it has to be sellable. You know, people have to want it. And I've been very fortunate that, you know, what I do, I create for myself. I don't really worry about like, oh, you know, is a 30-year-old, you know, in Boise going to care about this, or, you know, are kids going to like this? It's a really selfish process for me. If I like it, that's it. You know, and like I said, I'm blessed that other people enjoy it.
What is the most interesting work right now that's inspiring you, whether it's your own or somebody else's? What is Jeremy Mad Model feeling right now?
Wow, that's a tough one.
You get tough ones here.
Yeah, I know. I think watching artists, different artists from, you know, whether they're here in the U.S. or overseas, watching them self-produce their own products and grow their own brands. That is very appealing to me, knowing that they have the control to take their artwork and their vision and run with it direct to the masses, as opposed to having, you know, a middleman with, whether it's a client or, you know, whatever. I think the idea of self-producing something and keeping it true to your vision, keeping it the way you want it, is very important, and it's very appealing.
So it's more about artists who are following that philosophy rather than any singular work.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a ton of guys that, you know, I love their artwork, probably way too many to even list. Yeah, it's more, I think, in general, the idea of, you know, and we live in a great age where, thank God, you know, the internet, you know, you can get your artwork literally all over the world. With a single tweet.
Tell us about your current collaboration with Round 5 and Bruce Lee Enterprises. And then after that, what's next?
The Bruce Lee project is it's Bruce Lee's Temple of Kung Fu. I was approached by Round 5, who is the they hold the master license from Bruce Lee.
Right.
And basically, they approached me about a year and a half ago to help them, you know, create a new line of products. So I developed a platform for them, and essentially 28 brand new characters that reference not only Bruce Lee and the various movies he's been in, but kind of the whole world of Kung Fu.
How much fun is that, like, for real? Like, seriously?
I spent 2 months watching Kung Fu movies as reference. Like, just, it was awesome. You know?
And when people called you up, you'd say, come on, I'm working here.
Yeah, well, my wife, she was, you know, her eyebrows kind of raised every now and then, but, you know.
Did you ever say, honey, this is for us?
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing
this
Kung Fu for us.
She knows. I'm blessed to have such a supportive wife. So, it's been a really amazing experience with that, because that work was done, like I said, a year ago. You know, we're kind of finishing it up now, and it won't release until August. So the one thing I don't think people understand about toys is the stuff I'm doing right now doesn't release for a year and a half, 2 years. So I'm always in this kind of time warp of trying to predict, you know, what's going to happen. So it's interesting.
Our guest is Jeremy Motto, a.k.a. Mad of Mad Toy Design Incorporated, artist, designer, and businessman. The third annual Kansas City Design Week kicks off this week and runs through March 7th. Though Jeremy's talk will be sold out, there will be other interesting lectures and workshops, many open to the public. Jeremy, thank you for coming to Central Standard today.
Thank you for having me.
And tune in tomorrow for the Walt Bodine Show with Russ Simmons and the Movie Critics. Our show is executive produced by Bill Anderson and produced by Andrea Salenzi with help from Charlie Upchurch. Kim Noble is our announcer, and Emily Mutard manages our website. Central Standard's intro theme music is by Miles Bonney, and what you're hearing right now is a little ditty by the Will Knots. Up to Date is next with a look at local business conventions trying to attract new industry to the region. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.